Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Podcast, Episode 5, Die Hard. I'm Alex.
I'm Raz.
And today we're going to be talking about the 1990. I'm good at knowing things and reading.
Anybody who can make the mistake that this movie was made anytime after 1990 is a moron. You could not mistake that.
This film was actually made in the year of our birth.
Oh, that's true.
Technically, since we weren't born on the same time or from the same person.
That'd be creepy.
It would be creepy. 1988, meaning this movie is 22 years old, exactly how old we are.
Wow, man, you can do math.
I'm good at that, right?
I didn't know English majors could do math.
We can't.
I thought you left it to accounting.
We can't. I had to ask you how old it was before we recorded this, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
This is directed by John McTiernan, who also directed Predator, The Hunt for Red October, The Last Action Hero, which I am a big fan of, although it doesn't get a lot of credit, and also Basic, which I enjoy, although I know it's not really that great a movie.
I'm pretty sure whoever this director dude was, it was a pyro as a kid. There's not even a question.
I'm pretty sure all of his movies involve explosions.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
He is a pyro, he is dangerous, he's armed, and we should avoid him at all costs.
He's coming out with a new movie, the first in 8 years. It's called something that doesn't matter.
You know, it doesn't matter what it's called. Things are going to blow up.
They likely will blow up.
All right, who starred in this movie, Alex?
We had the greatest action hero of all time, potentially, depending on your point of view, Bruce Willis.
Personally, I still think Michael Jordan's the best action hero of our time.
Okay. Well, the best villain of all time, Alan Rickman.
I personally think it should be the Monstars as the best villain of all time.
Okay. And the best sidekick cop character of all time, Reginald Bell Johnson.
Which, in my world, is Lola Bunny.
We're going to start today, as we do every week, with our DVD box quotes. This will give you a little idea of how we think about the movie before we get into our actual discussion. Mine goes like this. Back when gas was 74 cents to the gallon, action movies were done right. And Raz says...
Why are there three more of these?
Hey, two of those three are pretty okay.
After watching this first one, why would you make another one? I mean, it was okay the first time, but...
Box office smash. That's why. The second one is widely regarded to be horrible. The third one brings in Sam Jackson, so that's always a bonus. And the fourth one is okay.
So let me get this straight. So they have one that was slightly above average. And then they have three more after it that are average to terrible.
No, one that is amazing, three more after it, two of which that are
terrible?
Pretty all right.
Pretty terrible, okay.
Pretty good.
They're pretty terrible.
Okay.
I'm going to get Charles Barkley to do a DVD box quote next week.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's terrible.
Not for next week. Next week is a good movie.
Oh, yeah, I can't bring out the terrible for that.
No.
Fair enough.
You have to wait till we do the sequel to Scott Pilgrim.
I'll probably be in jail for arson at that point. Moving on.
We're going to start now our character discussion. So John McClane, right? He's on, at the beginning of the movie, we see him. He's on an airplane. He's a little stressed out, as some of us are. He's got some foibles.
Let's first talk about the logic of what's going on here. John McClane is on an airplane.
Correct.
To go see his wife. In Los Angeles.
Yes, from New York to Los Angeles.
He is a cop in New York.
Correct.
The reason he didn't move with his wife to Los Angeles was because he was too busy being a cop in New York. There is an equally sized police force in L.A. Why would you stay in New York if you could go to L.A.? It made zero sense.
Well,
the logic made zero.
I think the implication there is that their marriage was having a little stress. And maybe that was why he didn't go automatically.
No, that's not what they said.
Well, you can imply it.
You can imply a little bit, but you have to make it clearer. Especially during at the beginning of the movie, where his former current wife, whatever they are, was preparing for him and hoping that he was going to come for Christmas.
Well, yeah, because they have kids.
Correct. So they probably thought about her going and taking this job. But he could have... There was no reason he couldn't have gone and continued to do a very similar job.
No, I agree.
That was my first problem with this movie.
Well, I don't think that's a problem. It's just the fact that he's kind of just a normal person. He's not He's not a super action hero like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's just a guy that doesn't like riding on airplanes and doesn't have a perfect marriage.
See, if they were going for being a normal person, you don't make him look like Rambo and make...
doesn't look like Rambo! Oh my gosh, he doesn't have shoes on for most of the movie.
Did you see his muscles throughout that entire movie?
He's got some muscles, but he's also a cop. The muscles make sense.
He's got muscles, he's in a wife beater, and he walks around bleeding for half the movie. He should have been dead like 6 times in this movie, and he keeps going. Any normal person is dead after the 3rd one, at least.
I'm not saying it's a realistic movie, I'm saying it's more realistic than, let's say, Rambo, or... Well, actually, the first Rambo is pretty realistic-ish. But, let's say, Predator.
I haven't seen Predator.
Predator has a bunch of military people shooting at an alien in a forest. They say lines like, "We ain't got time to bleed."
See, a better comparison for me would be compared to Turok from N64 versus... GoldenEye.
Sickle. I don't know what any of that means.
Turok?
I know, I have played a Turok game or two.
You haven't played it?
No, I have.
Oh, you have, right.
Right.
It makes... Turok has no plot.
I don't know what any of this means. So, going back to John McClane as a character, we see that he's a flawed human being from the beginning. Also, he doesn't look like the typical action hero. He's balding.
Stop. He does look like the typical action hero.
He looks like a typical action hero after Die Hard.
He's got...
Pre-Die Hard, nobody looked like him.
He looked like he had walked around with a machine gun, had giant muscles, and wore a wife beater, sweat, and smoked cigarettes for the entire movie. How does he not look like an action hero?
He looks like an action hero from 88 on. He doesn't look like an action hero from pre-88.
But wasn't Rambo before him?
I think so,
because they reference that in the reference Schwarzenegger. So he didn't create the genre.
No, he created...
And he looks a lot like them, though.
I don't think he does.
He does.
I don't think he does. I disagree. They
come from different backgrounds, maybe. They set the character up differently. But you can't possibly tell me you couldn't put Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger in this movie in basically the same character they are in each of their movies, and it wouldn't have worked. It would have been fine.
No, I disagree. I think
you make the wife a little bit thinner, a little bit blonder, and it works.
I think John McClane and Bruce Willis playing him brings more of a humanity to the roles than either Arnold or Sly can do. They're not good enough actors to be as...
You actually had feelings for this character?
Yeah, he was awesome.
How did you have feelings for him?
He's so great. Like when he's stressing out on the airplane, perfect example. Like, half the population stresses on an airplane. And, you know, seeing him do that as our first introduction to him makes us sympathize with him for the rest of the movie.
Right, and this logic continues to prevail when he's hanging from a 30-story elevator shaft.
Well, things get progressively more and more out of hand. I will give you that.
Yeah, that's my problem, is the stretch of logic. I don't have an issue if you make a movie illogical, but you should have something that backs up the illogicalness. If Rambo lives in the jungle and shoots things, Rambo lives there and you make a fairy tale. This guy, they tried to make him real, and then all of a sudden he, toward the end of this movie, is on this plane with Stallone and Schwarzenegger just shooting anything and running around and jumping like he's a mythical, magical transformer.
Oh, we're going to agree to disagree on that part.
That's what he did. Anyways.
I disagree.
Why? Why do you disagree?
Because the way that Bruce Willis plays him is very real as a person. I'm saying some of the things that he does are potentially not real, but as a person, he plays him as a very real... He has problems that any real person will have, be it with his wife or even, you know, not seeing his kids as much as he would want to. He also deals with situations in ways that we might, with a bit more expertise thrown in. You know, if we saw our wife getting basically kidnapped, we might try to do something about it. He's a cop and therefore has a lot better background to do all this stuff with, but I think the way that he reacts to the situation makes sense. And also, his humor is very, you know, it's a great character thing, because you can see like how he deals with the world is through this humor, basically.
And my point against that, I mean, we're going to have to agree to disagree. You're 100% right there. But throughout the movie, he doesn't keep that up, especially as the movie moves along. You know, he's running around with giant cuts in his feet, and he sits on breaks during the movie smoking. I mean, if you're really panicked and worried and trying to get things back like a normal person would be, you're not coolly sitting there having a cigarette talking to some guy on a walkie-talkie. That's just not how that's going to operate. I understand your connection with the way they set up the character. They wanted him to be down-to-earth and a little bit more believable, but because of how he acts in the movie, I couldn't personally buy that.
Okay. I think there might be some downtime, you know, and they also have to stretch it out for drama. There's got to be things happening in between.
I'm okay with the downtime, but he's sitting next to a window, calmly smoking cigarettes throughout half the movie.
What's he going to do?
Talking on the cell phone.
John McClane doesn't cry about things.
Exactly, and this is why I struggle with this, because normal people would look slightly stressed out. John McClane does not look stressed out half this movie, when he should be.
I would agree that he's not a normal person, but he's closer to the normal person end of the spectrum than either Rambo or basically any Arnold role.
I don't think it's far enough. I don't think it's a far enough difference to be able to really make that distinction.
All right. So let's talk about his opposite, Hans Gruber.
I loved Hans Gruber. Hans Gruber's tremendous.
If you don't love Hans Gruber as played by Alan Rickman, you are not a real human being. He is the best person.
So you're Little Wayne?
No.
I'm not a human, shout to all my moonmen?
Nope. Uh-uh. He is the best person of all time, ever, in existence, ever.
See, I still think the Monstars are a little bit above Hans. But Hans Gruber is... He was freaky. He was scary in a traditional sense. He was a little bit creepy. You were scared of him. You were legitimately scared of what he might do next.
Yeah, he's got this calmness to him that he usually shows, and he's like he's very on the level for the most part.
He's confident and arrogant.
Calm, confident, and arrogant. It breaks sometimes, and those are interesting. And I think one of my favorite scenes is when he's playing a hostage to John McClane. John McClane doesn't know that he's the mastermind here, so he puts on...
No, he did.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
No, he finds out that he was...
He pretty much thinks he does, though, because he gives him the gun that's not loaded.
Well, yes, but that's... He would give anyone a gun that's not loaded, because he doesn't know who's a bad guy and who's a good guy.
Correct, but he was pretty suspicious. I don't think we can say that he was just very suspicious of him.
Anyways, it doesn't matter. He's playing a hostage, and his American accent and kind of whininess... In that scene, hilarious and awesome. He's so great.
There's not a whole lot more you can say. He's very stereotypical. That's my only complaint about him. He's a foreign Eastern European guy, kind of spooky, a little bit of that Russian accent. You know what to expect with him?
I would say probably German.
German? Is that what it was? German? Oh, fine. German. We'll go with that.
I think...
But that would be, I loved him as a character, so it's not a real knock. Yeah. But if I was going to criticize him...
Yeah, I think
he wasn't out of the box.
Oh gosh, I think
out of the box.
Great. I think we have to give him credit for kind of creating that Eurotrash bad guy who's in it only for the money and all that stuff.
You're telling me there wasn't an Eurotrash bad guy before this movie?
I'm saying he made it popular.
Okay, you're allowed to say he made it popular, but
I'm saying he made it like iconoclastic.
That's fine. I'm okay if you say that. I don't know enough to disagree with you.
Okay. So, move on to the third and potentially best character in the entirety of moviedom.
No.
Yes.
No, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan's not a character in movies, except for one.
And he was tremendous. He should have gotten an Oscar that year.
No, incorrect. We are talking, of course, about Sergeant Al Powell, played by Reginald Bell Johnson of Family Matters. The best.
Is he related to Colin Powell?
No. No, he's not.
That's sad. That would have made Colin Powell like 10 times cooler.
So this is the guy that gets kind of roped into the situation about a third of the way in, give or take. He's John McClane's access to the outside through a walkie-talkie. And he brings some comedic elements, but he also, I think, brings most of the emotional elements to it. That's kind of a cool thing. You know, when he's telling him over the radio about how he shot at that guy, the one at the kid with a fake gun, you know, that's a touching scene that I enjoyed. Although you are rolling your eyes right now, and I'm going to punch you in the face.
There was zero emotion from either of these characters. Sergeant Powell just kind of stone face tells the story. And John McClane's kind of standing there. I almost looked bored half of it.
You are such an idiot.
There was no emotion in their faces. John McClane may have felt something. It didn't look it to me watching the movie. The scene should have been touching. However, they didn't act.
I disagree. I think it worked great as a scene. It deepened both of the characters. And also...
You're right. It deepens the scene. I agree that it was good for the movie. I just don't like how it was executed. I don't think the characters did a good job executing this.
I disagree, but that's not something that we can change each other's minds about.
It's true. I have one other problem with this character and how it worked. At the beginning of his set here, he's driving around like the typical donut-eating cop.
Yes.
And at the end of this, he's acting like he should be the future president of the U.S.
Wait, are you saying he doesn't go on to become the future president of the United States? Is this not Barack Obama in his early days?
I'm disappointed. Sadly, no. Barack Obama's a little thinner.
I guess it's true.
And so I had a problem with that, you know, the path that that took. It didn't seem logical. The second thing is when you get shot at and then subsequently drive your car off of a cliff, usually you're not standing on the front lines in the next five minutes.
It's a smallish cliff. Let's go back.
Well, it's a smallish cliff either way, though. Your car's smashed and you're injured. That's how this should go.
Well, yeah, but injuries in the Die Hard universe are usually less important than they would be in real life. However, I'm going to take a little bit of issue with what you said about the last scene where he becomes this kind of super cop. I think it's just the natural progression of his character. We learn from that scene that I talk about that he's afraid to pull his gun anymore. And so then at the end, he pulls his gun to save John McClane's and his wife's life.
Yeah.
Well, so I like the character progression there where he, through this experience, kind of develops more bravery and stuff like that.
I like the idea of the character progression. I agree. It was very cool to bring back that previous scene where he talked about not being able to shoot the gun. At the end of the movie, it made sense. It was like, oh, that's why we had this scene in there. My issue is the jump that was made between Donut Eating Cop to I should be president of the U.S. and I'm now going to save their lives. I think there was just...
Only shot one guy.
No, but there's a big leap. But he was acting like he knew what was going on and understood everything.
Well, he was the one that knew the most about what was going on.
That's my point, though, is he really understood things. And he was a very smart character for three quarters of the movie, but you introduce him as a dumb donut eating cop.
I think that's maybe mostly just for laughs.
I understand it was just for laughs.
They get rid of it pretty quick.
But it just took away. It was again another piece that took away from this kind of doesn't make sense. Not that it was going to make sense anyways. It makes less sense now. So I struggled with the logic there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your favorite character of all time.
Argyle. I loved Argyle.
The awesome limo driver.
I love the cuts. That was the comedic humor that I enjoyed, was watching the occasional cutscene of him sitting around calling all of his girlfriends in the back of his limo.
with the big teddy bear and champagne. And
him the big teddy bear is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And him blasting Christmas in Hollis, Queens as he rolls into the place, telling John McClane about how this was a Christmas carol.
Yeah,
I loved
pretty
that.
Awesome. It's a great any time he's on scene, automatically awesome.
Oh, my other favorite scene with him was toward the end of the movie when he takes the limo and rams it into the character that was breaking into the vault, and then punches him and knocks him out. And he looks all pleased with himself.
Yeah,
I was waiting for the end of the movie for him to gloat. They must have cut that part.
Yeah, it might be on the DVDs or something.
Yeah, but I figured he would have to gloat.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that.
He's a really fantastic kind of minor character that gets a good usage out of him just by cutting back to him for 30 seconds or so at a time. It's really great. And there's a couple other characters. The wife is kind of important. I think her name is Holly. And
Christmas Holly.
Exactly.
Woohoo!
She's mostly there for John McClane to save her. That's doing a bit of a disservice to her. She gets some good, like, standing up to the bad guy scenes. They're not anything all that spectacular, though.
No. My problem with the main character here is that it goes away from what you should always have in an action movie, is that the woman who is playing the one you're going after should at least be good-looking. Megan Fox would have made this movie greater.
If you didn't hear that, it's the sound of me hitting my forehead.
I'm telling, honestly, though.
Megan Fox is a horrible actress.
Let's take Megan Fox out of it. Let's take Megan Fox out of this equation. Holly wasn't that good looking.
But she kind of matches. Bruce Willis ain't that great looking either.
I know.
They're kind of made for each other.
I don't care if there was a reason for it. There's never a reason for this to happen in a movie. Okay. It's rule number one of an action movie.
Only
good-looking lead woman.
Only good-looking women in action movies, please.
Yes, that actually is the plan of making. Now that I think about it, yes.
Great. Well, I look forward to when we do Aliens. You're going to love that one.
Exactly.
There's two other people. The albino bad guy, I just kind of liked him. He was like the big kind of, he was the muscle of the group. It was kind of entertaining when he died. That's about it.
Yeah.
And then the FBI guys, I enjoyed them. They both had the same last name, but I forget which their last name was.
It doesn't matter. They're incredibly dumb.
They're like just kind of the bumbling FBI idiots, which is funny because we have a New York cop and a LA cop, and they're both way smarter than the FBI guys. It's interesting, funny.
Yeah, I have nothing more to add. I agree with that.
They're the comedy elements.
All right, let's move on to directing.
Yeah, in directing, really the thing to talk about here is action scenes. This is a movie where, for me, all the action scenes are freaking perfect.
I disagree.
They work so well. They're well shot, well made. Just everything just works for me. But go ahead.
All right, I had a couple problems with some of these action scenes. First, they love the stupid elevator. He was going up and down the elevator.
You're in a tower!
I know, but he insisted upon... You're telling me there's not stairs in this building?
There's a couple of stairs. Scenes.
He had two options. He could climb... He apparently felt that the only way to get from floor to floor was taking the elevator shaft, opposed to going down the stairs. That's problem A. Problem B, the way he's doing this is by holding onto ropes and, like, taking gun and putting it in between the door where the elevator is.
Yeah.
And he's trying to crawl down that. One time, it slips.
Yes, it does.
Everything falls. And all of a sudden, he drops three floors, somehow manages to also have arms up at the end of this, grabs a piece of another door and climbs out.
Hey, it's a little action movie, but that's all right. It's exciting.
It's exciting, minus the fact that it doesn't make a lot of sense when you're an everyman cop that you could be able to do this. I don't think they teach this to you in basic training.
Probably not.
My second problem is that scenes like that happened a lot, especially with the elevator. They just went back to it a couple too many times for me. Once, I'll accept it. Several times, come on, man, you gotta move on from that.
Okay. For me, the elevator brings perhaps the best scene in the entire movie, where the elevator comes up and the bad guys are all there with their guns pointed at it, and they see one of their fallen members, and across his chest it says, "Ho, ho, ho, now I have a machine gun."
I love that.
That's perfect. Genius.
That was perfect.
Genius.
I agree. That use of the elevator was clever.
Yeah. My favorite action scene was the glass fight on one of the unfinished levels of the Nakatomi Tower. I think it was really cool. Like the bad guys realize that he doesn't have his shoes, so they just shoot all the windows in this entire, like, the floor is basically made of windows, so they shoot all of them out, and he really can't move anymore. But then he gets around still and is able to kill the bad guys. And it's just a really cool, like, really clever ways for the bad guys and John McClane to operate within this different environment.
I agree. I thought that was a very clever scene. It was a pretty exciting scene because you weren't really sure if John McClane was going to get caught or not. And then it permanently injured him, which then made the rest of the movie make almost no sense, where he's got gigantic cuts in his leg, or his foot is bleeding, and shouldn't be able to walk anymore. However, somehow he manages to run around, throw bad guys around, and shoot people still.
Yeah, well, maybe he got one of those injections that they give, like, football players whenever they got, like, a broken arm. They're like, oh, you can play through that. We'll just give you a shot so you don't feel it anymore.
There are no cortisone shots that can fix that.
I think one of my favorite scenes in the movie that involves killing is actually not really all that much of an action scene. It's the first scene where Hans Gruber and the president of the company meet, and they're trying to get the access codes for a computer, whatever it is. And it's all dialogue-based. and it's Hans Gruber being super intense and scary, and John McClane's just kind of watching because he can't do anything about it, and then violence breaks out, and it's really cool. But I just think the interaction there was really great. You also get the smarmy guy from the company who's a huge jerk. He's in a lot of...
Unimportant what his name is.
Yeah, he's in a lot of 80s movies as basically the same character. He does the same thing a lot, and he's really good at it, but he's just like a huge jerk. And I love that scene. It's really great.
That was a clever scene, I agree.
Here we're going to include the lesson from last week. Last week we talked about Nightmare Before Christmas and the practical effects of shooting a stop-motion movie where everything is done on the set. In this movie, made in the 1988, there's a lot of action scenes that have a lot of explosions and stuff, and they're all done on the set as well. So, what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty impressive if you are a pyro and like blowing things up.
Who doesn't?
Fact. The two that really stuck out to me were the scene where they were shooting a rocket launcher and blowing up a tank down below. And the second scene that I'm also assuming happened on set was when he backed the car off of the cliff.
Yeah.
And fell down and it crashed.
Yeah.
So those two scenes, the mini kind of a chase scene sort of, I guess if you could call it that, both I think fit my homework assignment.
Yeah, I think they do. This is something that we're kind of missing now from current action movies, like, for example, Transformers. Transformers, there's a lot of explosions, but a lot of those explosions are CGI explosions. Some of them are real. In fact, maybe a good amount of them are real, but even having some of them do CGI kind of lessens the impact. And especially when there are giant robots fighting in that movie, I didn't feel the giant robots fighting. You feel the bad guys fighting each other in this movie because it's all real on the set.
And you know why Transformers is better than this?
Don't say Megan Fox or else I'll punch you in the face.
Giant Transformers, lots of things blowing up, the new Camaro, and of course Megan Fox.
And that's it for Lightboard Podcast. We're never returning ever again. For this week's installment of Raz Learns a Lesson, I, upon rewatching this, realized that it's basically a Western. And they update the Western in some cool ways, but it's basically a Western, and I'll tell you why, because you're looking at me all skeptical. Like, the Western...
There's no sand! And there's no cowboy hats!
He does say yippee-ki-yay. Mother, blah, blah, blah.
He did say yippee-ki-yay.
Mother, blah, blah, blah.
Right, mother, blah, blah, blah. He also said that.
Yeah, so this is how it's a Western.
Don't you need to have John Wayne for it to be a Western?
No, John McClane is a very similar name.
It's not John Wayne.
Anyways, so you got your kind of secluded area.
Does that mean that Little Wayne could be in a Western because he shares something similar to John Wayne?
Yeah, they were both in jail, right? Or John Wayne is in jail in movies sometimes. Okay, so now stopping to talking about people named Wayne. Here I'll outline how this is a Western. You ready?
Nope.
We have your secluded town, basically being the whatever floor they're on in the Nakatomi Plaza. They're cut off from the rest of the world. You have it being invaded by bad guys. And then you have a Lone Ranger coming in saving the day. And there's also a romance.
I don't understand how this specifically relates to Western, but I'm not going to argue it currently.
It's a kind of a Westernish. That uses some Western tropes and updates them to be an 80s action movie.
I still don't buy it. However, my homework for this week is trying to find something in the next movie that is a classical genre or is updating a classical genre.
Right. And okay. We'll tell you at the end of the episode what movie we're going to be talking about next week. Let's move on to our last segment in directing. The general 80s-ness of the movie. Now, this is something...
Can we eliminate the 80s?
No. The 80s were a fine decade. Plenty of good movies came out in the 80s. Plenty of good music came out in the 80s.
If I had powers like Harry Potter, I'd run around and I'd obliterate everybody's memories of the 80s.
So
70s to 90s.
It doesn't make any sense.
The 70s were great. They had the Grateful Dead. And the 90s were an improvement because they had the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And they had Space Jam.
Okay, so now that's basically a view inside Raz for you. What is it? What were your problems with the 80s-ness of this movie?
The ugly hair, the lack of believability of a lot of the scenes because they didn't use any CGI.
And after that makes it more believable.
No, but yes. After you watch enough, a lot, there is some very well done CGI.
Oh, I agree. But
and so when it is well done now, it looks a lot better than action stunts that don't look believable at all.
All the action stunts look fine here. You're dumb.
Man, this is a descriptive reason to disagree with me. I have a concrete reason. The action scenes aren't all well done. You're dumb.
Exactly. Point proven.
The plot line was very iffy for me, and the characters weren't all that well developed, which I feel like not seeing a lot of 80s movies, kind of a trend in the 80s.
It could be a trend now. You know, it's basically just a trend in movies where action movies, this is smarter than some action movies. I wouldn't say it's the smartest action movie. That's probably, like, the Bourne movies are probably among the smartest action movies. But this movie, it's got, you know, the plot is simple, but it's not stupid, I would say.
My biggest issue with the plot is just the backstory doesn't make sense. Because to me, the backstory sets up my believability for it. For example, in Transformers, the Transformers come from a far-off planet. They kind of tell you that backstory. It's quick, but it kind of makes a little sense. Let's make a believable yet unbelievable action movie. And so we're going to make a backstory that goes with that, and it doesn't make sense.
Okay. I would agree that maybe most of the characters, if not all, are kind of simple stereotypes. They're there to do what they do in the movie. They don't really exist as characters outside of, I would say, John McClane and maybe Holly, but she's very stereotypical as well. I think they're all very straightforward. There's not a lot of depth other than what we talked about maybe in that scene where they describe the...
There is zero depth in this movie.
Okay.
Minus the elevator shaft. That was deep.
Alright, let us move on to themes, shall we?
We shall. Were there any themes in this movie?
Die Hard?
One theme we came up with was problem solving. There's a little bit of problem solving in this movie.
Yeah, you get some good scenes of John McClane figuring out inventive ways to kill bad guys because he doesn't have very many resources.
Why did you put Christmas on this list?
Why do you think we're watching this movie at this time of year? It's a Christmas movie. They're having their Christmas party. They're playing Christmas music. You got your Christmas in Hollis. You got, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun.
John McClane should have knocked out the bad guys with a candy cane.
Sequel.
With gingerbread machine guns?
Let's do it.
Great. Glad to know you agree.
Yeah, I would definitely say that this is one of those movies set at Christmas rather than a Christmas movie.
Yeah, Christmas is a reason for the plot to happen.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
It could just as easily be a birthday party that they're going to, that they're having, and that's the reason why they're the only people left in the building after hours. There's no reason for it to be Christmas.
It could have been Spaghetti Man Day.
Exactly. It's really anything. You know, I enjoy the Christmas touches. That's just because I enjoy Christmas, but they don't really add all that much.
No.
It's just kind of there. Another lesson we learned from this movie, Raz?
Always tip your limo driver.
Exactly. Make them pay attention. Not call their girlfriends while you're in the middle of a terrorist crisis.
It's fact.
Another one, perhaps?
Violence is always the answer.
Thank you. Maybe one more?
Federal ineptitude.
And maybe one more?
Show me the money.
Okay. As you can see, this movie is chock full of themes. Ranging from how horrible the FBI is as an entire group of people, and also if a terrorist says, "Give me your money," you can just give him the money.
Yeah, usually when you're dead, your money's not very useful to you, so you should just hand it over.
Yeah. What else is going to happen here?
I agree.
And now, the most pressing question of our time.
The dumbest question of our time.
The most pressing question of our time. What is the better 80s movie, Die Hard or Back to the Future?
This isn't even close. It's not even in the same ballpark.
I agree.
It's like I can't even come up with a comparison, it's so dumb.
It's like, let's say...
The Clippers and the Lakers.
Right.
You got one team that was inept forever, and you got one team that wins championships.
Yeah.
And that is why Back to the Future is clearly the better 80s movie. And that's why
Die Hard is the better
80s
movie.
It's Back to the Future. Back to the Future.
Die Hard?
This movie, my first problem with this argument, they have nothing in common, so they shouldn't even be compared.
They're 80s movies, they're very popular.
And this is why it's not close.
Go on.
DeLorean, really cool car. There are no cool cars in this movie.
And the limo is awesome.
No, the limo is not a cool car. Two, the women
Back
to the Future are better looking than Die Hard.
Yeah, but it's also his mom.
I don't care who it is. The women are better looking in that movie.
And?
The professor is really, really cool.
Well, even the Clippers have Blake Griffin.
Even the Clippers have McClane. McClane is more like Blake Griffin. He's the only person in that movie doing anything.
Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber's like Donald Sterling on the Clippers, just sitting up in his box heckling his own players because he's an idiot owner. It made some sense. There was some logic in that. At least the professor built a car that went back in time. Opposed to, let's go to a Christmas party. Why are you going to the Christmas party? That was strange.
Because it's Christmas! Why else are you going to go to a Christmas party?
And finally, the quintessential reason why Back to the Future is the better 80s movie.
I'm ready for it.
It had its own ride at Universal Studios.
Ooh.
That is the top of my argument. And you cannot argue with having your own ride at Universal. Even if it doesn't exist anymore.
I think, rejigger the, what's the one that falls? Tower of Terror? You should rejigger the Tower of Terror to be Die Hard related.
If it was a Disney movie.
Yeah, they should still redo it.
You could pretend to be Bruce Willis hanging with a machine gun on the roof.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Okay, so this is the reason why Die Hard is the better movie, obviously.
I'm ready, because I presented quite the argument here.
Yeah, you did. Obviously, Die Hard is better because, one, it's not stupid.
It's not stupid.
Back to the Future is dumb.
You got a group of people trying to steal $650 million, which is randomly stored in a vault in a 30-floor building, with a guy trying to save the building and his wife while hanging down an elevator shaft.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. As long as...
It's better than a car that has to go 88 miles an hour and get 1.21 gigawatts.
Have you ever ridden in a DeLorean?
No.
I've ridden in a DeLorean. Believe me, 88 makes sense when you're riding one because they don't go faster than that.
Two, Die Hard is infinitely more quotable. Infinitely more quotable. Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Mummer.
Right.
You got your... Ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. You got your thing where he quotes some guy and then says benefits of a classical education.
Is it really a good thing that the movie's quotable all the time?
Yeah,
There's somebody, somebody who both of us know who overquoted that movie.
Oh.
And since we both know him.
Yeah, but it's not his fault. I mean, it's not the movie's fault that he's an idiot. Okay. Anyways, more quotable.
All right, so
although I do like at the end of Back to the Future 1, I think it's at the end of Back to the Future 1, there's a line where we're going, we don't need roads. I enjoy that one.
I saw Back to the Future like 10 years ago, so
that's when the car flies. Yeah, it's
a I can't tell you if it's quotable or not, but...
It's you know, Die Hard is a better
All right, what's the
movie.
Rest of your argument?
Die Hard has a Bruce Willis in it. Unlike Michael J. Fox.
What's wrong with Michael J. Fox?
Bruce Willis could beat up Michael J. Fox in a second.
Yeah, but Michael J. Fox is a much better actor.
Have you seen... trying to think of a good Bruce Willis movie.
Exactly. And we have confirmation. Again, Raz is currently winning this argument.
Die Hard.
It's like the Scott Pilgrim podcast all over again.
I won Scott Pilgrim.
No.
Oh, and the final reason... Because Bondo says, I'm always right. And you're always wrong.
So let me get this straight. So your arguments are that this movie made sense, which it clearly didn't.
It's better. If movie is better, that's argument number one.
Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but...
It makes all the sense in the world.
I'm going to give you a draw on that argument.
I appreciate
it. The rest of them don't make sense. Theme park ride! Theme park ride!
Yeah, but quotes.
Car. And better looking women. and the cool guy, and there was actually a plot that had a backstory that made some sense.
Yeah, but Hans Gruber and John McClane together beat up anybody in Back to the Future, and also all of the people in Back to the Future.
Yeah, but they're just going to go back in time and, like, take steroids. They're going to find out what Barry Bonds was taking, shoot themselves up, and come back. And then they could win.
Maybe that explains how John McClane got to run around the whole movie. Maybe he went back in time, got his feet fixed, and then popped back at the very same second.
And this is not helping your argument, because you claim that it made some kind of sense. Okay. And so, I win this argument. So Thank you very much, folks.
The debate rages on as to whether Die Hard or Back to the Future is the best. Please write us in and tell us what you think. You can also just give us a DVD box quote. We haven't gotten any of those yet. We'd like to hear from you guys. You can make up a clever little one or two sentence argument for or against the movie. That'd be great. You can send all of that feedback to thewhiteboardpodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our website, thewhiteboardpodcast.wordpress.com. What do you got to put in there, Raz?
T-H-E.
Exactly.
Let's give one final thought on our movie, just the overall impression.
Let's do that. Die Hard is the best. Shut up, Raz.
Wow, that's very kind of you. My personal quote for this movie is, it's an above average action movie. It was a fun movie that I enjoyed it once. I have no interest in seeing it a second time, a third time, or a fourth time.
It is, in fact, the second best action movie behind Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I did like that.
Okay.
There were snakes. That was fun.
There were snakes. And also more quotable. Better looking women.
Exactly. See? Indiana Jones knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it does.
Bruce Willis has no idea.
Yeah.
Bruce Almighty, you got a problem.
Okay. That's great. Yeah, so I really enjoyed Die Hard. It's kind of a Christmas classic for me. Right next to The Muppet Christmas Carol. Takes that permanent spot on my Christmas viewing schedule.
This won't be getting any kind of annual viewing on my schedule.
What about every decade or so?
I'm just attempting to forget the 80s.
Okay, you do that. Are we going to have to avoid the 80s in all of our movie choices?
No, you're just going to have to hear me whine about the 80s every time.
Great. Look forward for that as being one of the themes for the podcast.
Hey.
Now we're going to travel back in time for next week's movie, farther than we've ever traveled.
Now, this will stun most of you. We're going to be watching It's a Wonderful Life, I have seen 2 to 3 times, and Alex has never seen.
Never seen it.
I'm almost shocked, because it's on Stewart, every year.
Frank Capra. Yeah, see, this is the thing. I always see it, I'm always like, I don't really want to watch that. I've been watching more and more old movies. Jimmy Stewart is a freaking awesome actor. There's no reason for me not to see this movie. However, we are going to see it projected in a movie theater on an awesome screen that's like a throwback to the 20s and 30s era movie houses. So it should be a really awesome experience to watch this in that situation. So we'll come back, talk about that, talk about the movie. Again, please give us feedback to those addresses that we said. Leave us a review in iTunes. That would help us out great. Is there anything else you want to add there, Rez?
Nope, other than I won my argument, and Back to the Future is the best movie ever.
You're an idiot.
In this argument.
I'm Alex.
I'm Raz.
Don't say what you're going to say.
Megan Fox should be in every
movie. No. You do realize that she is the worst actress I have ever seen.
And this is me caring.
She's horrible.
She should have also been in The Black Swan.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Mila Kunis is already pushing it.
You know what would have actually made Scott Pilgrim better? Take out Scott Pilgrim and put in Megan Fox.
Can I just ask you how long we're going to have to hear about how horrible you thought Scott Pilgrim was?
Years.
Is that going to be every episode of the podcast for like the next year and a half?
There's a slight chance.
That's going to be bad.